from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. It's not often that someone goes from Yale Law School to being the winner on the CBS reality series Survivor. Even less likely, perhaps, to go from Survivor to a posting as the deputy director of the Federal Communications Commission. But such is the career path of Yul Kwon, who is now taking a turn hosting a new PBS series called America Revealed. We'll talk with Yul Kwon in our first half hour. And then we turn our attention to baseball. The season is underway, and in our second half hour, we'll talk about what's in store for the Giants and the A's. Yul Kwon, and then baseball, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. As the son of South Korean immigrants, Yul Kwon began learning English in the 1970s by watching Sesame Street on PBS. He quickly became a very good student, good enough to attend Stanford and later Yale Law School. But after a stint in Washington and another at Google, Yul Kwon's career headed literally in a very different direction, to the South Seas, as a participant in the CBS reality series Survivor. Kwon won, the first Asian-American to do so. Next stop, serving as an FBI instructor and 2 years as deputy director of the Federal Communications Commission. And now, Yul Kwon's career has come back full circle. Once again, public television is front and center in his life. But this time it isn't Sesame Street. He's the host of the new PBS series America Revealed, which premieres Wednesday night on KQED9 at 10 o'clock. And Yul Kwon joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Just before we went on the air, you were talking about how public media was central to your life. And do those memories really go back to those days of watching Big Bird and beginning to piece together the English language?
Absolutely. You know, my parents immigrated to this country, dirt poor. They had $200 in their pockets. And, you know, they didn't really have the resources to put me and my brother into daycare or preschool. And so since they spoke limited English, they really had us watch television to learn English. And, you know, the best shows for us were Sesame Street, Electric Company. And really, you know, they were the shows that I think gave me that first rung of opportunity to start imagining a better future for me and my family. And so I grew up watching PBS. I mean, you know, my father was a huge fan. Eventually, as I got older, I started watching shows like Nature and Nova, and they really gave me the inspiration to study hard in school and try to realize the American dream.
We'll come back to sort of some gaps in between. But of course, at some point, you switched rather radically in terms of your media exposure to your time on the Survivor series on CBS. And I watched a little clip of it on YouTube yesterday. And in the sort of closing pitch that you made and the night that you won a Survivor, you talked, though, about one of the reasons why you wanted to be on the show and one of the reasons why media interested you was in changing people's perceptions of Asian Americans. Right. Tell us something more about why that was so important to you coming out of your own childhood, because as I understand it, as a boy, you felt like you were bullied some for who you were.
Absolutely. You know, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of television. And on one hand, it was, you know, a source of inspiration for me. At the same time, it was also a source of limitation and constraint, because despite all the hours I spent watching television, I just didn't see a lot of people who look like me. And whenever I did see Asian Americans on TV, they were typically portrayed according to these negative stereotypes. And so over time, I just sort of adopted this sort of notion that I couldn't be a leader, that I couldn't really speak up. When I was a child, I also had a pretty severe lisp, which caused a lot of other kids to bully me and make fun of me and call me names like Chicken Chong. So over time, I ended up becoming extremely introverted and quiet. I became afraid to attract attention to myself. I developed a severe social anxiety disorder to the point that I just avoided any kind of social contact. And I think there are a lot of reasons why this happened, but I do think that the lack of positive role models, especially in the media, contributed to that. So when I got the opportunity to be on Survivor one day, you know, I thought my parents would be mortified, which in fact they were. But I thought it was an opportunity to go on a mainstream television platform. And the great thing about a reality show is that it's not scripted. So I didn't have to speak with an accent. I could be who I was and hopefully try to change some of these stereotypes for the next generation of Asian Americans.
And how did that come about? You say that so casually. So one day when I got to be on Survivor, I mean, how did that
literally
happen?
That's what happened. I didn't apply. I one day just got an email out of the blue from a casting agent saying that they were looking for more Asian Americans for the upcoming season. I didn't know this at the time, but my season ended up becoming one of the most controversial seasons ever in television history, because for the first time, they divided the contestants into racial tribes. So they had a war of the races, and they had trouble getting enough minorities, especially Asian Americans, to apply for the show. So they made a heavy effort to recruit Asian Americans, and they found me sort of randomly.
How did your career trajectory take the orientation that it did? You go from this, the childhood you just described, the childhood is a child who's being bullied, to a star student, Stanford, Yale Law School, time in Washington, D.C., time at Google, jumping to Survivor, then to the FCC, now to PBS. What is it that has pushed you to those different steps?
I think it's both a personal and professional challenge. You know, I learned when I was young that I don't have a lot of courage. Like, a lot of things scare me. Getting in front of people, you know, doing something like this was something I'd never imagined I could do when I was a child. But what I learned to do was to push myself out of my comfort zone a little bit every day. And over time, to just challenge myself by putting myself into different experiences and environments where it would force me to grow. And I found that that the process allowed me to overcome my shell and to achieve a lot more than I thought I could before. And it also applies in a professional sense. You know, I very much believe that if you have a lot of different experiences, if you can add different sorts of skill sets, that it really makes you a much more well-rounded person and a more well-rounded leader. And it was interesting because by the time Survivor came along, I'd already worked in I worked in politics, I worked in consulting, and I worked in law. And I was able to leverage all of those things in terms of doing well on the show and ultimately winning the game.
Give me an example. How did working for Joe Lieberman in Washington, D.C., or going to Yale Law School, or working at Google lead to being able to win at Survivor?
Sure. So being a lawyer is all about learning how to persuade people and coming up with compelling arguments. On Survivor, you have to persuade people. And at the end of the game, you have to make a closing argument to the jury as to why they should vote for you. So, you know, the legal skills certainly came in handy. Working as a management consultant and working in business helped me in terms of developing strategy and learning to build high-powered teams. And working in politics really is all about getting people from different backgrounds with different agendas and forming alliances so you can work together. And again, all these skills came in handy on the show.
And so let's jump ahead to where we are now and the show that will be on the air next week on KQED9, America Revealed, again Wednesday at 10 o'clock. How does that jump to that? I mean, how does that interest you have in making arguments apply to this particular series?
Well, at a very high level, I think what I've always been interested in is a study of systems. My undergraduate major at Stanford was symbolic systems. And so I've always been interested in human systems, technology systems. How do these larger complex systems emerge from relatively simple constituent elements that interact with each other in simple ways? But if you have enough of them in the right complexity, you get this qualitatively different behavior. I mean, you could look at, neuroscience, right? Individual brain cells, they interact with each other, but at a certain point, at a certain level of complexity, you get consciousness. Same thing in physics, same thing in economics. So, I remember back in school when I was studying this stuff, I was thinking, you know, it'd be really cool if they had a TV show about this type of stuff, but I could never imagine it being really interesting because you don't have the visual tool to show these systems coming alive. America Revealed is that show. You know, we've finally gotten to the point where we have the technology and the computer animation and the aerial photography skills to really depict these systems in a way that you've never seen before. So when they approached me about the show, I wanted to do it for a couple of reasons. One, intellectually, I thought it was fascinating. It was just an incredible topic. But also, it was PBS. And, you know, for me, I always wanted to give back to public media because it gave me such a critical step up and support at a time when I needed it. So for me, you know, the opportunity to make public media, PBS, relevant for a whole new generation of viewers was something I couldn't pass up.
Yul Kwon is our guest. He is the host of the new PBS series America Revealed, which debuts next Wednesday, April the 11th at 10 p.m. You can find a link to it on the KQED.org website as well. If you have a question for Yul Kwon, we just have him with us for the first half hour of our program today. So if you'd like to ask him a question about anything from Survivor to the FBI to Google to PBS, you can do so at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your question or observation on our Facebook page as well. The first episode of America Revealed is about revealing our food distribution system. Mm-hmm. It starts out in a really interesting way, which is you on a bicycle in New York City with a pizza delivery man. Why start that way?
Well, the basic idea behind the show is that, you know, we're surrounded by these vast systems that make our lives easy. You know, they feed us, they move us around, they give us electricity, they give us cool things like iPods and phones. And we use these systems every single day. We interface with them, but we don't really understand how they work. I mean, so pizza is sort of a quintessential example. You pick up the phone, you order pizza, and about 30 minutes later, you get it delivered to your door. But you don't really understand how the pizza got there. You don't understand all the different elements within that larger system that all have to work at the right time to get that pizza to your door when you want it. And so we start off with, you know, me driving around Midtown Manhattan, riding around on a bike, trying not to get run over by the cars. And we look at that pizza and we go back through the process, back in time, to see where all the ingredients came from and what it takes to make that pizza happen.
One of the – let's listen to one short example, because you take us through sort of where those ingredients are grown, including in the Central Valley of California, tomatoes, of course. And then we spend some time in the Midwest and the growing of grains, corn in particular. I want to play just one – this is a short cut from the show where you are at a cattle feed place. And set this up for us, if you would, Yul. You're there because this is where – basically, this is where cattle get big.
Right. So we start off in a supermarket, and we're coming in from a story about corn. It turns out that a huge amount of the food that we eat every single day is actually made out of corn. So it turns out that another thing that is essentially processed corn is beef. So then we go to a CAFO, basically a huge lot where they bring young beef or steer, and then you feed them huge amounts of corn so that they double their weight in about 6 months.
So let's pick up with this part of America Revealed. And the first question you'll hear is a question from Yul about what's going on at the feedlot.
How much do they weigh when they come in?
About 600 pounds.
600? And how much do they get up to by the time they get out of here?
1,300 average weight.
So they double their weight.
Right.
So I'm trying to imagine, I weigh about 155 right now, so in 6 months I'm going to weigh 300 pounds.
In order to satisfy our cravings for beef, nothing about these animals' lives has been left to chance. Conceived artificially from parents who never met. Injected with antibiotics to guard against disease. Their diet supplemented by growth hormones to maximize every calorie. What this guy sees is just another human. What I see is a new kind of animal. An animal bred and raised to meet the demands of the producer and the consumer.
An excerpt from the upcoming edition of America Revealed. You're sort of posing an interesting question there, but you don't editorialize about it. I'm interested in the choices there, because it seems like, you know, if Michael Pollan were hosting the show and not Yul Kwan, for example, you'd go in a different direction there.
Right. I think, the producers and I made a very conscious decision at the beginning of this whole series not to come in with a predefined political angle. I mean, there's lots of stuff out there where people have very clear viewpoints. But what we felt was sort of missing from this discussion was sort of an understand and informed perspective of just how these systems work. And so what we're trying to do is give that sense in a highly visual way, and, you know, using tools that you've never seen before, but not telling you what the right answer is, but we're just giving you information so that you can learn more and start building that foundation for having an intelligent discourse, which is something that I feel like is missing in this country.
Do you feel then that it's that you did you have to sort of bite your tongue at that point? I mean, I see you in this series, and there's a point where you are it would seem like you're kind of inching towards saying, and is this such a great idea that we're fattening up this cattle and we're pumping them full of antibiotics and all the rest, and we're adding 600 calories a day to our diet? But you don't – is that – but that clearly was a conscious choice on your part, not to push in that direction.
Absolutely. I mean, there were certainly times where I have very strong opinions on certain issues. But there's a lot of stuff out there. If you're looking for critical analysis or in fact, just sheer criticism of a lot of these practices, there's a lot of stuff out there you can already find. But again, what we're trying to do is really just tee these issues up for discussion and not just take a very critical tone. But at the same time, you know, we have these remarkable systems that if you take a step back are really just – sort of minor miracles. I mean, if you look at food, for instance, for the vast majority of human existence, the single biggest threat to human survival has been starvation. And it's only in the last 100 years or so that we've conquered that challenge. And in fact, we've not only met that challenge, we've gone so far over the other end that now the biggest threat to American survival is obesity and heart disease. So again, we're not trying to say that this system is necessarily, you know, inherently bad, but certainly we want to tee up some of the challenges.
Let's take a call. We've got a first caller on the line, Pi from San Jose. Go ahead, please.
I love the show. Congratulations on winning Survivor. I was voting for you big time.
Oh, thanks.
I have a question, actually a comment as well. You know, being Asian American myself, growing up with the same, you know, Sesame Street, the Bloodhound Gang, you still find it frustrating for the lack of male, Asian American male role model and just movies and TV shows. And, you know, it's just, this problem hasn't gone away, you know, and the only thing I can do, you know, being in my late 30s is now to be a role model for, you know, the youth in American, or actually just the youth period. So my question is, do you still find it frustrating, you know, the lack of Asian American role model other than the stereotypic roles of, you know, liquor store owner or, you know, dishwasher, you know?
Yeah, Pi, yeah. Thanks for the call.
I absolutely do, and it's a great question. Yeah, I do find it very frustrating. I think we've made a lot of progress in the last few years. You know, when I won Survivor, the two most recognizable Asian American male actors on TV were Daniel Dae Kim on Lost and Masi Oka on Heroes, and they were characters that didn't speak English. I mean, they're portrayed as foreigners as opposed to Americans. Today, I think it's gotten much better. I mean, Daniel Dae Kim is on Hawaii Five-O and he speaks English from day one, which is, I think, an improvement. But I still think it's very difficult. And one of the reasons I decided to host the show was because, as far as I know, I think this might be the first national show about America that will be hosted by an Asian American man. And I'm grateful to PBS for giving me this opportunity because I don't think a lot of other networks would have done it. And my hope is that by being on the show, it will help people perceive us as being Americans as opposed to foreigners, and that, you know, give a little bit more inspiration for the next generation of kids who might see someone like me and think, hey, you know what? I could grow up and do the same thing too.
What are some of the other upcoming episodes, and are they built in the same kind of way to essentially sort of, you know, pull back the curtain so that we see the way in which a key part of America functions?
Yeah. The next episode is going to be on transportation, followed by energy, followed by manufacturing. And it's the same basic idea. So in transportation, we start off with me flying into JFK and then trying to figure out during rush hour how all these people get into Manhattan. So what you end up seeing is we have this amazing visual of basically all the planes flying into the three airports in the tri-state area. We got their GPS coordinates, and you see how many planes are just coming into this concentrated area in a short period of time. And then we move to another graphic where we're showing all the 100,000 people who are coming to Manhattan using ferries and boats. And then on top of that, you overlay all the people coming in on trains and the subways, and very quickly have this incredible visual representation of this beehive of activity of this incredibly important system.
Is it important to you then the way in which this is done? You've mentioned a couple of times the way in which it's intensely visual, because if you just hear the words, gee, I'm doing a series on food, manufacturing, transportation. Exactly. It sounds like, you know, you're not the PBS that PBS would like to think it's becoming.
Right. One of the challenges, especially in a format like radio, is the series looks amazing. I can guarantee that viewers will see something that they've never seen before. And it's hard to talk about these issues. And I think, you know, when you talk about systems and networks, it just seems sort of hard to grasp. But we finally have the visual tools to show these systems coming alive. And I think you'll see something you've never seen before.
And why is it important that we understand those systems? Why is it important for me when I go home tonight and have a pizza that I understand how that pizza was put together or the way in which I drive from here back to my home?
Because these systems essentially dictate our lives. You know, and one of the reasons why I left government to host this show, people need to realize that, you know, America did not become the world's foremost economic superpower or military superpower by accident. The reason that our country is the best country in the world today is because of certain key investments that we made on a national level to build out these national infrastructures that provided a platform for growth. So whether it's the Intercontinental Railroad or the interstate highway system or the internet, right? Again, we made these big investments that allowed us to become an engine of growth and opportunity. And my concern is that if people don't understand these systems, and if we don't continue to make the right decisions in terms of investing for the future, that we'll find that our children are not going to live the same standard of living that we enjoy today.
And it's clear in the food program, the first episode, that that system is under pressure. And mm-hmm. and is that a common denominator throughout all the shows, that these marvelous systems, marvelous though they may be, are at a kind of tipping point?
Absolutely. So in every episode, we explore how these systems developed and evolved. And a lot of times, it didn't really go according to plan. But they're amazingly intricate and resilient. But at the same time, every single system is overstretched and overburdened, and they're reaching a crisis point. So what we're trying to do is tee up some of these challenges so that we can start talking about these issues before it's too late.
John in San Francisco has a comment or a question. John, go ahead for Yul Kwan.
Hi. I study ecosystems, and I was just wondering, since you study systems as well, have you found any commonalities between systems across disciplines? So ecosystem science can talk to, you know, people that study social sciences and social systems.
Absolutely. You know, the basic theme of this series is that we're all living in these interconnected systems. So even though we've sort of broken up the series into different episodes focusing on discrete topics, really they're all part of an interconnected web. So when you're talking about food, you can't not talk about energy. When you're talking about transportation, again, you can't talk about where does the power come to power these vehicles. And I think at a very high level, you know, I studied an interdisciplinary major. I was very interested in complexity theory, which basically posits that there are certain principles of complexity that are applicable to all complex systems. And so what I find really interesting is that no matter what you're looking at, you see the same issues arising over and over and over again.
John, thanks for the call. Let's get in one more. We just have a few minutes left, but Janica in Mountain View has a question too. Janica, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a Korean-American female that's a new manager at a relatively small law firm that's highly political. Mm. I wanted to pick your brain about any tips or advice you have in being a successful manager in a highly politicized environment. I'm currently managing a team of four. Thanks. I'll take my answer off the air.
Janica, thanks.
Okay. These are issues that I've encountered in my career. I think there are certain challenges, especially for a lot of Asian Americans. There have been a lot of studies talking about why Asian Americans often hit the glass ceiling. And it's such a common phenomenon, they call it the bamboo ceiling. But one of the key issues that they found in terms of why they don't progress in their careers is because they don't find the right mentors and they don't develop the broader network of people within their firms or organizations to find those internal champions who will push for you and mentor you and really advocate for you when you're trying to get promoted. So I think this is a common thing that, you know, certainly was something that came up over and over in my life that, you know, I've learned to overcome by reaching out to other people.
And is there something that you feel like you want to do in turn in that along those lines to help those young Yul Kwans who might be experiencing some of the same things that you did 25, 30 years ago?
I do. You know, part of the reason why I'm involved in media in the first place was because I wanted to try to provide a better role model, the kind of role model that I didn't have when I was growing up. But also, I do a lot of speaking to, you know, college students, high school students. And one thing that I've been talking more about are my personal challenges when I was growing up, because what I find is that a lot of kids out there are struggling with the same issues, struggling with the same issues of self-identity, self-acceptance, and especially in a lot of Asian American cultures or Korean American cultures, there's not always that awareness and sensitivity. For example, when I was going through a lot of the problems that I had, I just never occurred to me that I could talk to my parents about it because I thought they would be ashamed of me. And I want kids to know that it's okay and that they should reach out and get help.
Yul Kwan, the host of the new series America Revealed. It's on KQED9 next Wednesday at 10. He's also the host of a weekly news program about Asia. It's called Link Asia, and it's produced by San Francisco's Link TV. It'll be on KQED's World Channel coming up soon. Yul Kwan, pleasure to have you on our program this morning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.